Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 373 of the Roguecast, which is May 17th, 2022. Not a sexy class.
Did y'all know we have a TikTok?
I did because I started making some of the TikToks.
Dave is making the TikToks. He's an influencer. Yeah.
Now, that said, Shireen was making the TikToks.
Correct.
She's out of the store for a few weeks.
Yep.
And so I'm going to be doing that. But I was already getting some advice from her and learning the basics, and she helped me out a whole bunch.
And today you made a dirty TikTok that won't post.
I made a dirty TikTok that hasn't posted yet. It's about Nightwing's butt. Or rather, the cover of the variant cover this week that... Really, you can only say it showcases Nightwing's butt.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say he's like got the most famous butt? They've started referencing it in DC
mm-hmm.
for years now.
The yeah. only thing rivaling is Captain America's ass.
Yeah, that's true. He did, like, once it's officially called out in a movie or something yeah. like that, it's official.
Look, it's America's ass, but Nightwing's booty gets a lot more play.
That's true. That, I believe, was first mentioned by Midnighter very overtly
yes.
In the
Tim Grace, Seeley
in
did
the
that.
Grayson
yeah.
series. Yeah. And then since then, because he spotted him through his, like, digital cover by his butt.
Yep.
Anyway, please give our TikTok likes and follows and things like that and go enjoy it.
Yep.
If this what does eventually upload, I'll put it on, you know, the Facebook page too.
It's delightful.
We'll try and get it out there.
I'd completely forgotten that Midnighter thing.
Yeah.
He identified him by his ass because he was part of
Spiral
and his face was blurred out.
Altered it. Yeah. Yeah.
Way to go, Tim Seale. I'd forgotten yeah. that. That's really good.
Well, there's also that great sequence of the girls. He was the gym coach.
Who would have thought that Tim Seeley of the comic Money Shot would ever do
a slightly dirty reference.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we like Tim Seeley.
We do. Store news. Free RPG Day is still coming up. That's Saturday, June 25th.
Hell yeah.
We got some stuff in this week. The big one is Mordenkainen's presents Monsters of the Multiverse.
Yep. Not officially tied into the... What's the movie called?
The Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Multiverse of Madness. It's also alliterative.
It's also not Everything Everywhere All at Once.
But yes, it turns out there are multiple multiverse properties going on. And this D&D thing is really more of like a sort of a monster manual. It's the updates on all the monsters. Mm-hmm. It's got a bunch of new playable races or new stuff on them. Like some of these like... have been around, like
basically
Goliaths
it's a bunch of monsters, but they're giving you playable stats for a bunch of different races.
Yeah. Yes. And what was it, like 250 monsters
250
in there?
Monsters, 30 playable races.
Super
yeah.
cool art.
Yep.
I'm also making a TikTok for that, which when it goes up, the extra time I'm taking is to add delightful stickers to it.
Please look at the TikTok.
Yeah, they're going to be... They won't hear the end of it if you don't
Dave,
look at it.
Is it sexy?
A little bit.
All right.
Yeah. Dave's bringing sexy TikTok back. We also have the party game Platypus, which
okay.
Is it a sexy platypus?
I was going to say, I'm going to repeat platypus. My question.
There's a theme to the episode.
I don't like that.
This episode.
Are you saying there are no sexy platypi?
There may be sexy platypi, but this one is not.
What do you know about this game?
So this it's a word game. There's like you put out like eight words that range from like, you know, famous people.
Yep.
Like Scarlett Johansson was one of the ones, and then like
clarifying
nouns, that kind
sexy
of thing.
Words.
And then you have cards that are like adjectives describing them.
Yep.
And so basically, you're trying to play the adjectives, and people are like, "Well, that definitely doesn't describe this person." And it's sort of like a reverse code names. You're trying to eliminate everything but the one word that is actually the secret word.
Oh, interesting.
The descripting of
yes,
the word?
Yes, descriptive. That is the
okay.
platypus.
Okay. That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. We also got in Hibachi.
Okay.
Which looks like a slight, maybe a dexterity game where you're little cute animals making food on Hibachi.
That sounds like
that
fun.
That looks super fun. Dawn of the Zeds, a British zombie game.
Nice.
Save Patient Zero, which looked like a Hidden Movement team variant of Pandemic, maybe?
Hmm.
You're basically trying to save this patient that's infected with a disease, and you're working, you have these screens, and you're sort of working together, but also you don't know all the information. Looks very fun.
Interesting.
Yeah, that seems like a cool premise.
We got the Wave 16 minis, which includes the giant mimic outhouse.
Yep.
Yes.
And also, a bunch of
them. Boy, if you ever wanted to really raise the notion that mimics could be scary, Bust out the mimic, turns into the toilet. Not since the promotional campaign for the movie Ghoulies. You 80s kids look this, sure. You will maybe remember this, but everybody else, just type in Ghoulies movie poster, and that should get you there.
That's true.
David, well, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I know you know, because it was on the back of comics in
yes,
the 80s.
Yes.
The slogan was, as they showed one of these creatures crawling up out of the toilet, they'll get you in the end. Get it? It has a double meaning.
Yes.
Aren't there multiple
anyway,
movies?
I'm sorry to the listeners.
I'm sorry for this whole podcast. Just start over.
Keeping the sexy going. Keeping the butt theme going, really.
and the last thing to mention is that we got Coyote and Crow, the sort of indigenous future RPG.
Yeah.
Which looks super cool. Really good art. That got Kickstarter a while back. We finally got our copies, mm-hmm. So it looks like a cool RPG. All right, the big news this week is that Conan is leaving Marvel again.
Yeah, they've had it for what, 5 years?
2019.
What's that?
3 years.
3 years. I can't do math.
Two of which were pandemic years.
Yeah. Oh wow, that was all that during that time.
Yeah.
Huh?
Was it? Really?
I thought it was started somewhat more well before that.
Yeah,
but
I did too.
But yeah, they in their time, they reprinted a good deal of the Dark Horse material,
yep.
a lot of new stuff.
Yeah, Jason Aaron run.
And reprinted, I'm sure, some of the original Marvel stuff from the 70s. Yep. So this makes the second time they've had it, and the second time they've lost it. now, do we know where it's going?
No, the people who actually hold the license are like maybe going to do their own thing.
Now, here's another question. Are all these trades then going to go out of print soonish?
I assume they probably will.
At the very least, within the next year, yeah. Probably.
Well, the big question is Savage Avengers, and
right.
they make some reference to it. They say like we hope we work something out. But
we've talked about this book often enough on this podcast. But for those who don't know, it has a time thrown out of time. Conan, who's basically in the present Marvel universe,
we're going to talk about it again this week because they're relaunching it.
Yep. But for how long?
Yeah, which led to the question, we're like, did they not know?
Now I want that omnibus.
Well, I'm 100% getting the omnibus, so.
Yeah. Because you're never, I mean, if it's going to become super hard to find.
Yeah. Yeah, we've seen how what happens when these things go out of print, they just, you basically have to wait for maybe, if you're lucky, some other company gets it a few years later and gets around to reprinting it.
Yeah.
So I guess that is a general thing to pick up Conan merchandise now.
Yep. I don't know, there's no transition here. Christopher Walken's going to be the Emperor.
That is the Emperor.
Just like Emperor?
What do they call it? The Padishah Emperor of Dune?
Of Dune.
Yeah.
But also...
I'm okay with
our
that.
Lives.
Mm-hmm.
He's just going to ask for more cowbell a lot.
For those who may remember his music video in the 90s for Fatboy Slim, did Weapon of Choice?
Yep.
Straight up referenced Dune with talking about walking without rhythm to avoid attracting the worm. And as if prophesied, which fits Dune, probably set down a prophecy by the Bene Gesserit priestesses in an attempt to manipulate the local populace.
That's us.
That's us. Oh, shit.
Dude, what's the shirt you're wearing right now?
It's a Dune shirt. Anyway, Christopher Walken is going to play the creepy emperor of the known universe in Dune 2.
Now, I know you haven't watched it. Nick, have you watched Severance?
I have watched the first couple of episodes.
So you have not seen Christopher Walken yet?
No, they bump into him in the hallway.
Because Christopher Walken, everybody thinks of him as just this weird dude, but he's actually a really good actor, and I think he'll be perfect.
He's got some of the same qualities as, like, a Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. You know what you're getting.
Yeah, you do. I was going to ask, just as an aside, what's your favorite Christopher Walken performance?
Man, I don't know. Pulp Fiction's hard to beat.
I know. Pulp Fiction
is great character. It's like a great come-in, drop-out, but also True Romance. Like, I love when he works with Tarantino.
It's true.
What are his starring-est roles?
Well, he was the Prophecy. Remember, he's like the renegade angel in the Prophecy?
Yeah, no, because I haven't seen the Prophecy.
Oh.
It's good. Actually, the first Prophecy is really good.
What else is big ones? I mean, I feel like I'm missing some
Batman
big stuff.
Returns.
I mean, it's not
in it.
That's not nothing.
I mean, he was in Deer Hunter and Sleepy Hollow. He was the Headless Horseman.
Yeah, that was actually a lot of fun.
He was...
Of these, by the way, his, like, little moments in like the in Tarantino movies are kind of jumping out for me.
Dave, it almost felt like that was a Tarantino little moments.
What about his portrayal of the in Jungle Book as the
King Louis?
King Louis?
That was
he
great.
Actually did a really good job.
Yeah, he did.
It was great.
I really liked that, and that was Jon Favreau, I believe.
He has 140 actor credits, by the way.
One of my favorites is a very small movie that.
Oh, here comes the indie boy.
Yep. Here I come. Have you ever seen Suicide Kings?
I probably have never heard of it.
Nope.
No, actually, I have. I've heard of it, but I have not seen it.
He was really, really good. He plays a mob boss, which is not far off from what he usually does. But
is he the lead in Dead Zone, the original Dead Zone?
Yes, he is.
Yep, he is. Believe it or not, he was cast as the normal guy school teacher. I got some kind of strange power.
I'm going to teach all your eighth grader.
Little man.
Little man.
Everybody has a Christopher Walken impression, and everybody's is at least basically pretty good.
Mine is not.
No, mine's not either. But
every once in a while, I can like kind of get lucky, and I was like, oh, that one came out all right. But yeah, I'd have to probably.
Let's also not forget honorable mention of View to a Kill.
What's his name? Zoran? Max Zoran?
View
to a Kill is not a good movie at all.
No, not at all.
But I believe
he does have fun.
I remember Christopher Walken being pretty creepy in it. So I will give him that he may be the best thing about that movie.
Yep. Hello, Mayday. Grace Jones's Mayday was pretty cool.
What I need is for people to, folks to send an email to the store and tell us your favorite Christopher Walken role. You can just put it in the subject line.
Yeah. Also, he was in Balls of Fury.
Oh, that's good stuff.
I never saw that.
Me neither. But he was the best part of the trailer. All right, anyway, so he's going to be the Emperor. So let's talk about some trailers. There's good stuff. The Orville New Horizon is finally coming. It's been very delayed.
Yeah.
That is season three of the Orville?
Three and final, most likely.
Right.
Yeah, I think so.
It sounds like they're all moving on. It's a very serious, like, very next-gen trailer. It does not look like... There's a couple of bits of funny, but it is definitely not playing up the humor.
It felt like instead of sort of, ironically, right as regular Star Trek comes in with their episodic series, this looks like it's, while it will have episodic stuff, it looks like there's kind of a bigger meta plot of them traveling through this uncharted territory.
I'm not spoiling things, but...
We are spoiling something.
No, that's okay. I think I already knew
the
this.
The end of season two definitely...
It's their best of both worlds.
Yeah.
It's like that big level clock.
And it's like game-changing for that universe in a way that they hadn't done previously. So this kind of jumped to a more serious tone dealing with sort of that fallout kind of makes sense. I'm glad they're not just going to ignore it, even though I kind of like the moment-to-moment clownery that they do.
I'll be curious to see where Dave lands on Orville, because I know you wound up liking it, but also
at that point, Star Trek had
been a little fallow.
Right, and Star Trek also hadn't, very specifically didn't have an episodic show.
Yeah.
And now Strange New Worlds.
Now there's 72 different Star Trek
really
shows.
A really notable episodic show.
I'll be curious to see, Dave, because I know you also, what you liked about Orville Season 1, I'm not sure if Season 2 does. Season 2 changed gears a little bit.
Well, I've seen most of Season 2, and I liked it.
Okay.
Well, Season 2, it's not until the end that they kind of changed things up.
I loved Season 2. It definitely took a big uptick for me. So I'm very excited about this coming. But
and so
also,
when is that hitting?
June 2nd, I believe.
Yep.
Okay.
And the great part is, like, I don't mind having another show. I'm also enjoying all the Star Treks.
Yeah. I'm enjoying Stranger Worlds. I'm not watching anything else.
I've watched all of them. I've liked all of them. I should do a Star Trek podcast or something.
Yeah, you probably should. You're liking more than I am.
I know.
You can go on there and you can be a sycophant for Paramount.
Yep.
Good times.
Yep.
I can be a sycophant for Paramount, but just not for Star Trek.
We saw the teaser for Prey, the Predator in set in maybe...
I believe it is like 1700s, maybe.
Okay, yeah.
America?
Yeah.
I presume, not like necessarily Canada or anything
but
like
it's
that.
But it's pre-colonization America.
Right. Or if not, like, yeah, like, maybe not full pre-colonization, but maybe not...
So this is directed
genocide.
This is directed by 10 Cloverfield Lane guy, which I can't remember
his
name.
I don't remember his name either, but he's a great director.
I believe it follows. It's essentially a Native American woman.
Yeah,
Is the lead, and look, there was somebody else in there too. There was like
Native American man with the bone arrow.
But
I think he's about to die.
Yeah, I guess that probably was his thing. So yeah, in the trailer, what you see is him sort of run out of a tree line into like sort of a field of like wheat or something like that and duck down among there. He kind of surveys the trees. He's looking for something, pulls out the bow, stretches it taut, and then you see the trademark Predator
laser
sight thing on his forehead.
Yep.
Probably seconds before, he doesn't ceases to be the lead character. Yeah.
So the director is Dan Trachtenberg.
Dan Trachtenberg, okay.
Yeah, 10 Cloverfield Lane is actually one of my favorite thrillers of, like, the last 10 years. For me, it's, like, this really perfect mix of kind of both a classic suspense story of just, like, essentially being held hostage by a crazy person, but there is this, like, kind of Twilight Zone-ish thing of, like, wondering if this guy's crazy theory that UFOs have come or whatever, and then it's like toxic outside, and you're like, how much, if anything, of what he's saying is true, and how much is he just a crazy person? He's of course played by
John Goodman,
and the actress is
Mary Elizabeth Winstead,
as what I believe to be the smartest hero I've seen in a in that kind of scenario, maybe ever.
And the other guy is from Newsroom and the movie Hush. Crap! What is his name?
Yeah, the other guy who's held there.
Do you, the
oh god? Yeah, I remember.
He's a great actor. Yeah.
Look it up.
Yeah, he played Jim, right?
Yeah, he played Jim in Newsroom, but he was like scary in Hush.
Yeah, I forget. I forget his name, but
But so that's a good pedigree for someone doing this movie. I think the premise is cool.
John Gallagher.
When I was in the like late 80s, they did a Predator comic from Now Comics, I think.
Yeah.
And one of the handful of issues I had had a Predator in that was like in South America. This was, I think they had the license then, right? Cause then maybe Aliens.
Yeah.
And it had like the, I think it's like the actual, like, supposed to be the Yanomamo tribe from the Amazon.
Oh, and, yeah, I remember that.
And, yeah, these two, like, brothers, like, I think their village gets destroyed by him or, you know, one of their family members, and they go out in the jungle to try and hunt it down, and you have to use they have to pull out all the stops, of course. They have no super cool technology, but they know the territory. There's lots of, they know, you know, they've got the home field advantage, if nothing else.
Yeah.
And I imagine this movie, if they pull it off, will have some of the same qualities that, at least in my memory, was good about that. It wasn't like a great comic. It was just a cool idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, Predator is one of these things, like, with the exception of Predator 2, which some people like. I'm one of them. I kind of enjoyed Predator 2.
I enjoy it.
Predator is not a franchise that has made a lot of good movies.
No. Yeah, no, I, like, I always, you know, want to believe, but I've stopped keeping up with any Predator-type stuff, and I know last time Nick took a shot at it, he was destroyed by the Predator. what was that one? Predators?
No, Predators was the good one. That was Robert Rodriguez.
Predator was Shane Black.
Yeah, the Predator, which, yeah, that was awful. Jesus Christ, that was awful.
Like, Nick had PTSD from
I had to rewatch Predators and then the original Predator to get that taste out of my mouth.
Yeah, I have not been excited for a Predator concept in a while, but because of the director, because I think this premise is cool, if it gets pretty good reviews, I'm for sure
going to see
it.
Head, I am going to smash Predator and Last of the Mohicans together, and if it's not that, I'm going to be sad.
Well, I think it's going to have less white boy heroes than Last of the Mohicans, which is definitely one of those white savior stories.
Yes.
Speaking of franchises that have been cruel and battered, Resident Evil is getting a new show on Netflix.
What to make of this?
So it made, what, 6 movies? In one universe, then they rebooted it just recently,
that was another movie,
and now they're getting a TV show, and I'm like, how?
Yeah, the trailer looks good, like corporate zombie thing. That's a fun premise.
It's always a fun premise.
I'd say the trailer looks fine. It seems to after the initial outbreak to forward the timeline to what 2036 or something like that, so that they are going to get their own zombie apocalypse, but. You know, at that point, what are you doing that will be different from Walking Dead? And
flying cars.
You know, I'm sure that, like, the Stars is, like, their SWAT team people.
Probably.
Like, are they going to be in it?
But also, a doofy name. It takes place, Raccoon City, they seem to have made it into, like, a, you know, basically a planned corporate community, like a contained.
Oh, okay,
that is what makes it special, if it's, like,
yeah.
a...
basically, that gives them a unique setting.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is, and I don't know if they showed any of this in the quite in this trailer, is usually it's not just zombies. There's usually a bunch of weird other hybrid creatures, giant monsters, stuff infected by the T virus, and all that stuff. Mutant sharks.
Yep.
Crazy shit. What were those things, Nick? Remember in the original game that stuck on the ceilings?
What they called,
Rippers or something like that. But they ran along the ceilings. I mean, that was pretty cool.
Yep.
I would like to see them break from being just another goddamn zombie show and to, like, have some of those weird monsters in it. They should be in there.
I think the odds are low.
I think so, too. There's almost zero chance I will watch this, even if somebody says it's okay. But if somebody says, if it somehow is really good, I will watch it.
I think it seems possible. I don't know.
Nick, tell me what you think.
I don't know if I'll press play.
Wow, Nick's not gonna press play.
Listen, there's been a lot of like you said, six movies.
Also zombies. Nick the zombies are to Nick.
Not a zombie man.
As Hitmen are to Dave. Yes. What's my thing? Deadpool. No, because I've seen both movies.
Although I clicked on a link just to see kind of what the deal was, and I see that Lance Reddick is playing Albert Wesker.
Randy, I know you're not a big fan of fantasy. I'm going to say all things fantasy and elves.
Elves are my thing.
You are like, would rather see them burn in hell.
I'm like, elves, why can't there be hitmen and zombies?
Killing these elves.
Killing all these elves. There's going to be hitmen and zombies in that Lord of the Rings thing, right?
Uh-huh. Big time.
So the other trailer of TV we saw...
Gandalf, look out, he's got a gun.
We saw the FX trailer for Old Man, which looks like Jeff Bridges playing an old retired. It basically looks like very Taken-esque.
Right? A little bit, but...
Some sort of retired, but we're not exactly sure what.
Here's the thing. It's an FX show.
Yeah.
They're going to bring... They don't make bad television in a lot of ways.
No, they really don't.
I think they've had maybe...
Somebody tell me what a bad thing that they've made is.
I don't know.
I don't watch enough TV. I literally wouldn't know.
The thing I would say is Sons of Anarchy, which I know you like.
Yep. Yeah, Sons of Anarchy is like a little pulpy at times, and you can argue kind of loses its way a little bit, but when it's good, it's really good.
It is.
And I think that's probably what will happen here.
This one just looks the pedigree. It looks good. Jeff Bridges is great.
Well, they have Bridges is always going to bring his A game. They've got a dope-ass song in the trailer, kind of creepy song from the band Uncle.
The action sequences look pretty stellar, very kind. Not like shaky cam Bourne style,
right?
More
kind of tough, sort of brutal action sequences, and whatever it is, like what his past is catching up with him in some way. You're hearing him talk to his daughter, played by Amy Brenneman,
yep.
And he's saying something, and she's like, "I didn't know about this side of you. I don't know any of this." And he's like, "Come with me wherever he's going." Europe, was it?
It looks like it's kind of traveling everywhere. Yeah.
Okay, he says, "Come with me, and I'll tell you everything."
Yeah.
So maybe aging father and daughter as she
and
finds
two
out.
Dogs.
And two dogs.
So he's
as she finds out about his secret life. What
he's
do we got?
A former CIA agent.
Okay.
The people who are doing this did Black Sails, Human Target.
So Human Target is a knock.
I thought Human Target was good.
It was okay.
Okay. I thought people liked Human Target.
I mean, Rorschach was in it, and he was okay.
So look at the...
Black Sails was fun.
Yeah, they did C for Apple TV, which I heard some people liked.
Yeah, the Jason Momoa property.
Yeah.
Is this going to be like essentially like more like the CIA's badass propaganda, or is there any chance that this will have any stripe of introspection?
I mean, with FX, I would expect a little bit of introspection, but I think with that pedigree, it is probably CIA badass.
They're definitely playing up the badassery on the trailer.
Yeah,
I read it differently. I feel like John Lithgow is playing the CIA head, and he is definitely more of the menacing.
Yeah,
and Jeff Bridges is kind of on the out.
Right.
I mean, sure, he's a CIA badass, and you can't get around that because that's a trope at this point. But I bet it has more interesting things to say.
Yeah, I'm curious about him being on FX and being Jeff Bridges.
And I love Lithgow, and seeing him back to playing a more sinister role sounds fun.
Yeah, he plays a good bad guy.
I'm one of the few people who love as Rennie Harlan's Cliffhanger.
But
he's
also,
such a good villain
the
in that.
One with Denzel Washington, where he's like the serial killer who
Raising Cain? He was also Raising Cain.
It wasn't the one with Denzel Washington like shoot is in his underwear and he like shoots him, or is that not John Lithgow?
I don't know. This rings a vague bell as you're talking about it.
I remember because the tagline for it. I'm gonna see if I can find it.
Rennie, while you're looking it up, I'm gonna say, by the way, that I truly despise Rennie Harlan.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
not just for many of his movies, but also because he married Gina Davis, and that's my girl.
That's my girl.
It was have otherwise I had a good shot.
Have you ever seen Cliffhanger?
Now here's the thing. This is what I was gonna say. I kind of like Cliffhanger.
Yeah, I do too. It's one of those weird movies that still kind of resonates.
I mean, it's a dopey Stallone movie.
Yeah.
It's a Rennie Harlan movie. And yet, there's not a whole lot of mountain climbing thrillers. And it's a pretty good mountain climbing thriller.
Do you remember who Stallone's best friend is?
No.
It's Yondu. It's
Michael Rooker. Michael Rooker? Oh, interesting.
So the movie I was thinking of is Ricochet.
Oh, I forgot
Fred
Ricochet.
Fred Decker story.
Yeah.
Fred Decker and C. Stephen DeSouza. I remember because I never saw the movie, but the trailer, which must have played. When was this? Was it?
It was like 90 something, right?
It was 91.
Yeah.
It must have been a year I was going to a lot of movies because I saw the trailer 100 times. And it was the. I think his character name is Harry Styles. Nick Styles. He's like,
I was going to say, not Harry Styles.
Nick Styles of the LAPD made an arrest in his BVDs.
Oh,
and
God.
He takes down Lithgow, who was a hostage, yeah. And then Lithgow comes after him later, like sort of Cape Fear style.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Lithgow.
Anyway, seen the movie, but I remember it because of the trailer.
Hey, sometimes that's all it is.
As long as Raising Cain has been brought up, Raising Cain is about kind of a crappy thriller, as I remember. Although it might have some good redeeming stuff from mid or late '80s.
Yeah,
with John Lithgow as a guy who has a split personality.
Yeah,
and there's some twists in it. It's directed by Brian De Palma. I just have to say, its poster slogan was the best, cheesiest poster slogan ever. Here it is. Demented, deranged, deceptive, De Palma.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Yeah,
have you ever seen Raising Cain?
I saw it at the theater, Nick.
Yeah, okay. Then that slogan worked on you.
Yeah. Well, I was a little kid who wanted to see an R-rated movie when my older brother and sister went together.
I was
going to
say, I'm sure as a kid you were like, I don't know who De Palma is.
Barton Fink.
Deep cut Simpsons reference.
Yeah.
But yeah, I actually kind of want to see it again later because... Well, there's like twins, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. That's just built into the premise.
Yep.
But
are you going to spoil the movie?
No, I'm not. If it is what I remember it is, and I can't remember if... I know we looked this up at one point.
Yep.
It has the craziest reveal ever.
You did, and it is.
It is.
Is it, in fact, Nick? Oh,
I think
wow.
So.
Fantastic.
I mean, we could spoil it.
No.
All right.
It's not. Go.
Okay.
You have 1 week to go see.
Don't go see it.
Raising
Cain.
It's
streaming
somewhere. Bad movie.
Is it not? Are you sure?
I don't think it was. I mean, it's been a long.
All I've heard is the twist, and it sounds pretty bad.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, if you just say the twist out without the context.
Okay. Fair enough. Yes.
All right. I'm going to try and find this streaming. Nick, you would look it up on Letterboxd. What else do we have?
If you say that it was a sled the whole time,
I will say 59%. That's not amazing.
That sounds about what I expected.
All right, Spiderhead. This is the last trailer. It was a Netflix movie. Guess it was not originally supposed to be a Netflix movie.
No, it was not, and it was originally called Escape from Spiderhead, which I think is a better title.
I mean,
I'm not sure either one is particularly great.
Spiderhead is what some organization. They're doing experiments.
It's like
when you go to like Pharmaco or one of those places where you get paid money to have some medical tests on you.
These
are sinister.
They're like controlling your mind or something.
Well, it looks like it actually. They talked about like altering your mental state, and it kind of reminded me of what the experiments that they do. People who have seen the movie Serenity, Firefly, the movie thing, what they did that created the Reavers. The attempt to kind of like mute our impulses, because you see these people in like these, brightly lit, study cells that look like sort of like prison cells, but they're all nicer looking, I guess, just white. And they begin acting out like it's like their id goes crazy.
Yep.
They're fighting. They're having sex. It's all kinds of crazy stuff is happening, and clearly there is some greater good that they are trying to do here.
So I will say that the big thing about this is, if I'm seeing it correctly, it's directed by Joseph Kosinski, who directed the new Top Gun.
Okay. Which is getting all the good reviews.
Dave, you're saying Thor and Mr. Fantastic create the Reavers.
Yes. Yeah. Right. So it's Chris Hemsworth,
Miles Teller, and Chris Hemsworth.
Right. And
you can torture Miles Teller. That's fine. I'm okay with that.
There's a slight pop quality to it. Like this isn't like a super serious thriller. There's a little bit of lightness to the trailer. It does look like it's going to have some creepy stuff in it and all that.
Well, it also has Journey Smollett, who was in Lovecraft Country and Birds of Prey.
Yep.
Right. Anyway, I don't have any strong feelings on it. It looked okay.
Yeah, that's where I am. Looked okay.
I'll press play.
I'd potentially watch it if you told me it was great.
I'm more likely to watch Resident Evil, to be honest.
Oh wow!
Really, you're Chris Hemsworth?
I watch TV series when I watch movies, and it's so.
I just watch both. I watch it all.
Also, I know that Nick, that you will follow an actor to the gates of hell if you like their past performances.
And I will. Randy will them throw like them into a
pit of hell.
I watched Extraction and I hated it. So, but it was.
What were you watching it for?
Hemsworth.
Oh, okay.
What lessons have you learned out of this?
I don't learn lessons. What are you talking about?
So they're doing a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen reboot at Hulu.
There's more to the story. Let Randy finish.
Okay. I mean, well, I just have to, you know, always, it's you know, I really actually do like Alan Moore, but it is kind of comedic, you know, to imagine him kind of just on edge, like his eyes going bloodshot as one of his friends in the pub is like, you know, they put out another League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. He's like, of fucking course they did.
Yeah, so League of Extraordinary Gentlemen had a famously terrible adaptation in 2003. It was so bad that it caused Sean Connery to quit acting.
Yeah. Periodically, by the way, I hear people who liked it.
Yeah.
It has become a bit of a moneymaker.
Oh, okay.
It's grossed over $180 million worldwide, which does not sound that much to me. It was a popular seller on DVD. So, yeah, it made profits. This one says that it's going to try to be closer to the comics, which... sounds good, except Justin Haythe, who is the guy rebooting it, is known for Revolutionary Road and Red Sparrow.
Okay.
Revolutionary Road, decent Kate Winslet flick.
Red Sparrow, was that the one with Jennifer Lawrence? She was like a Russian...
It was very, very bland.
Real bad.
Yeah.
Don Murphy, who produced the original, is involved as a producer.
Okay.
Yep. So there's nothing about this that makes me think it's going to be better.
The comic, what makes the comic good, and of course the comic goes into like bonkers territory after, you know, it's probably a series of what, about 6 or 7 miniseries?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it gets like more and more dense and obscure as it goes along.
Yes.
Ultimately, he fights giant naked Harry Potter,
mm-hmm.
Presented as like the Antichrist.
Yep.
But along the way, that like even before that, there was like 1984 and James Bond the Rapist and all of this crazy stuff. But what makes it is like Kevin O'Neill's art, Alan Moore's writing, the very dense style of it, the fact that it is like literally every character that like walks onto a panel is some character from English literature. Like some random person that's going to just like get a car thrown through him is like Heidi from, you know, some from the books.
Yeah.
That just randomly, you know, he populated the world, with those characters and it's so dense. There's whole books of actually annotations on these. But like, yeah, I don't think like as a cinematic universe, actually like it's a cool idea, but what you would want to make would not be really what Alan Moore does. No. Which is like these very kind of dark, darkly funny.
And if you did adhere to basically panel for panel reshoot, a la like Gus Van Zandt's version of Psycho, I don't know what you would get. I don't think it works.
What rating is it going to get for the Mr. Hyde Invisible Man scene? Because boy, that's one that you're going to always remember after you've seen it.
However, if you did do it, like if you did. That would be kind of like Red Wedding level. Oh, yeah, that would get them so it's much
very
like
it's very memorable
buzz.
Yeah,
I don't know how you do it.
Yeah,
good luck with that to them.
I will say this about that scene and League in general. I've discovered as I look back on more stuff that a lot of his stuff is pretty rapey, and sure. I kind of don't want his stuff. I feel the same way Alan Moore feels about his stuff. I don't want it adapted. It had its time. I don't necessarily recommend League of Extraordinary Gentlemen anymore because of that, even though I love the artwork and I love the concepts.
Yeah.
But like, other than Watchmen, I'm like, I kind of find a lot of more stuff kind of creepy.
Except for Top 10, which is not in print.
I do love Top 10.
But there's like a bunch of beautiful stuff in that, and his Swamp Thing run has this great love story at the heart of it.
Yeah.
But it is true, like, he has always, that is like a dark piece that is always in his work. So, like,
Top 10 has it too. It's got like the kid rape in it.
It does. There's a,
I forgot.
Yeah, like, it is something like, he cannot walk away from, like, these sort of depravities of man.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, that's kind of, to some degree, what his art is there for. But it's, like, even his sort of more all-ages-y stuff does it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. At the very least, I would sort of, like, kind of give a little trigger warning to anybody reading just about anything from Alan Moore at this point. And, boy, especially Neonomicon. But, I can still generally go back to much of it.
No.
Let's see. What else we got? We got Married with Children getting an animated series reboot with the original cast. This is weird.
What a weird thing.
But also, I kind of like this because this gives hope for my Terriers animated season 2.
Wow. Weird cut. Weird flex thing.
I'm kidding.
For people who don't know, Terriers, which was a show that once existed.
Season 1 show about beach cop detectives that I loved so much that I made a full-on podcast for it.
Yeah, you did. That was a fairly impressive venture. Insane, some might say. Yeah, Married with Children, famously raunchy comedy of the late 80s, made the Fox Network, blah, blah, blah.
I never watched a ton of it.
I didn't watch a ton of it. Like, every kid in the late 80s, I had a crush on Christina Applegate.
Yeah.
And like, what's her name? Katie Sagal has gone on to be a great actress.
Yeah.
She's in, like, so much, like, tons of good stuff. You know, whether it's, like, voicing, she's already, of course, voiced animation on Futurama.
Yep.
And, she was great on Sons of Anarchy.
I was going to say, she was the mom.
Briefly on Lost.
I was going to say, this suggests a animated Sons of Anarchy.
But it is weird, like, you know, it's kind of hard to imagine it sort of without the actors just being themselves.
You know, Married with Children was so cartoonish anyway, though, I could kind of see it.
That's true, and, like, here's the thing, is, like, cartoons have gotten kind of slyer.
Yeah.
If done right, well, it still probably wouldn't be for me, but I could see a way it could be done.
Dave, with the Married with Children animated thing, was that Family Guy or Simpsons that you and I are always referencing?
That's actually a Simpsons bit where they were actually just making fun of the then-fledgling Married with Children.
But it is the funniest Married with Children thing I've ever seen, and it is animated. So.
Right, that's true, that's true. And it's mercilessly mocking its crudity.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, you know, sure.
Yeah, everybody should get their thing.
It's a thing that exists.
Yeah.
Other than I think that the kid who was like the son might have turned out to be a creepy dude.
Oh, I think that's right.
Everybody else seems cool.
Yeah.
What's it? Christina Applegate has done some good comedic roles, and she's been talented. Katie Sagal, we already mentioned. What's his name?
Ed O'Neill did Modern Family.
Did Modern Family, and I feel like he's been in some other stuff that I've seen him in that he's been good in. So good on them. I hope it works out.
Just continues the trend of everything old coming back again.
And then. John Watts, who recently was left of the Fantastic Four movies, has announced that he's doing a Star Wars. It's actually, I guess it's not announced, it's sort of leaked.
So he was going to make the Fantastic Four movies for Marvel, and he did make the Spider-Man movies?
Yes. He did make the Spider-Man movies.
All of them?
Yep. So this is it's being developed under the codename Grammar Rodeo.
Okay.
Which is a reference to an episode of The Simpsons in which Bart and his schoolmates steal a car and run away for a week using a phony educational event as an alibi. Here's what we know. It takes place during the post-Return of the Jedi reconstruction, same as Mandalorian. Its plot is a secret. It's by director John Watts and writer Chris Ford, who wrote Spider-Man Homecoming. It's casting four children around 11 and 12 years old, and is being described as a galactic version of classic Amblin coming-of-age adventure films of the 80s. So Goonies in space.
These guys probably know what they're doing.
Yeah.
I'm not... you know, I've seen Stranger Things and stuff like that kind of... doing a pretty good job of, doing a pastiche of kids on bikes type movies from the 70s and 80s. I don't necessarily want more of that. I grew up with that. It was like a staple for me, a lot of those movies. I have a feeling they're going to do a good job. Those Spider-Man movies, just the other day I was thinking about, actually just the soundtrack on them. Mm-hmm. The pop music and stuff like that. Not the orchestral, but the pop music. Incredibly well chosen.
Yeah.
Those movies won me over in a pretty big way, given that I was kind of not on board new version of their version of Peter Parker, Iron Man Jr.
Yep.
What do y'all think?
I think it's an interesting idea to drop that kind of thing into the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
That's something I wasn't expecting.
I hope they're all Jawas.
One of them better be a Jawa.
They're all Jawas.
There probably will be like a Wookiee or something.
Who's all Jawas?
Whether it will skew too goofy at times? I don't know.
That just doesn't seem like that director's style.
But that is Lucasfilm style.
I mean, maybe.
We'll see.
You know, we could get, like, the, you know, people who didn't love the Scooter Gang.
What if it's...
Those people are wrong. Scooter Gang's amazing.
What if it's six kids that are all assassins?
Uh-oh. They're all aging assassins called back for one more mission before they turn 12. They're too young to infiltrate the school.
21
too
jumps.
Old. All right, all right. We didn't really think that one through.
21 Jump Elementary students. In space.
In space.
Moss 21 Jump Street.
Moss 21 Jump Street. all right, one last bit. And this, we usually don't do like rumors and stuff, but this seems pretty solid. Seems like they may have accidentally let the cat out of the bag and that She-Hulk might be coming August 17th.
Yeah, just a release date. This is the Disney Plus thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I forget the actress who's playing
Tatiana Maslany.
Right, and this is something we're generally liking.
Oh, I'm excited for it.
Okay. I'm excited, although I see so many dang articles like touting its like such craziness on set.
They always say this, and it's always great.
Oh, yeah, no, I know. I just like, I'm seeing more articles about this one than I usually do, and I'm just like, what? What? Why?
Yeah, what happened?
Yeah, what happened? What's going on here?
Maybe Sean Connery got in a fight. He's dead, and he's not in the movie. He's not in the show.
Ghost of Sean Connery showed up on set.
The Ghost of Sean Connery showed up on set.
You gotta watch out. Maybe Frank Langella showed up and started groping people.
Oh, God.
I'm excited for it, and I'm glad that means that I was worried, like, what's going to happen after Ms. Marvel, because we didn't know what's coming next. I bet there's a Star Wars in there, too, somewhere. Maybe the Ahsoka show, maybe...
Well, we know... Probably not the Ahsoka, because we know it just started filming.
Oh, okay.
Maybe Wookiee High.
Wookiee High. all right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics week of Wednesday, May 18th, and the big thing, of course, this week is that Nightwing's out again. Nightwing is it fair to say favorite comic for all of us right now?
A favorite? It's not quite the favorite for me.
What's the favorite?
Oh, what's the favorite?
Well, you know, I like Superman better.
Really?
Yeah. I've said this all along, or not all along. Like, the last issue or two, I've been saying that I feel the stakes are higher. Nightwing has been calling on more buddies, Flash and other, and, like, Barbara and stuff like that. And I really like it, but I almost feel like he's a little safe.
Interesting. I see what you're saying. You're saying that Dick is weak.
No, it just feels a little safe.
It's an interesting wrong opinion.
I feel like the stakes are just a little bit higher in Superboy or Superman. And also that, like, I kind of like Luthor's villainy to me is nastier right now than Blockbusters.
I get that.
Now, that said, this is like saying, like, oh, it's only my second favorite of, like, of all the comics and superhero books going on right now.
Yeah. I'll slightly counter in saying, I think this is more unique for me because is that we don't get to see Blockbuster being much of anything in comics lately.
Yeah, yeah.
And
a return to some good villainy for him.
Yeah. And he's doing his best impersonation of the Kingpin that he can.
So this has more of Tom Taylor's usually great Alfred stuff.
The opening scene, it's not just like, I think it's actually unusually great, even though it's to be expected from him. He's come up with several things, like with some of the supporting characters, including that last issue of Superman revealed a connection between Alfred and the Kents. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
And I don't want to say too much about it because I want people to read that on its
really
own.
Good. Yeah.
But it was something that was Batman didn't know about.
Yep.
That Alfred like corresponded with the Kents, and it was like, so there's this really good scene, and this one has a scene where in a flashback, I won't quite say exactly what happens, but this flashback that has this great looking art that looks sort of like Jim Aparo or Marshall Rogers from like the late 70s or early 80s, but it's meant to just be the early days of Robin.
I love the printing of the first couple pages
because
it definitely looks like a Silver Age comic in a lot of ways.
Yeah, or Bronze Age.
By the way, Bruno Redondo is killing it.
Jeez,
he is,
man.
So
he
good.
Is.
That two-page splash toward the end is spectacular.
But in this scene, what happens is Robin gets in over his head as a kid and something bad happens and Batman is going to like dress him down even though he's like kind of injured and stuff and getting recovering, and Alfred gets in his face about it. And it's like, it's so perfectly done because Alfred is so commanding in this scene, but also, I was telling this to Randy earlier, don't you think, Nick, Batman doesn't, like, seem punked out. Like, he seems like, it's more like Alfred talked him into a place of empathy and to like, who he is, and got him past that burst of anger he had when he's being protective.
I want to say, there is a Easter egg that I just caught just now in the Welcome to Haven page.
Yeah? The big page? I saw that.
I did not.
I mean, I think we can say there's some passersby, and it's Marv Wolfman and George Perez.
Yeah,
but very specifically, awesome. They're running like a pizza. What do you call those?
A food truck.
Yeah, and like very specifically, as Dick and Babs are walking by, he's waving like, oh, as if, you know, it's as if it's his favorite restaurateur or whatever. Yeah. And yeah, like if you don't know who George Perez is, you know, you might completely. Not need to know it, but if that's, you do know who George Perez is, that Hawaiian shirt is hard to miss. Anyway, a neat tribute, really neat.
This also has a duo of doggies, which I loved.
Yeah, there's a bunch of good stuff in it, and I do. I was telling Randy earlier that Bruno Redondo is drawing this like a person who is aware that he's on a book that's going to become like probably a legendary run on it. I feel like he's really giving it his all. And just putting an incredible amount of work into these pages. So,
yeah.
And, you know, there is an edge to this because, like, all of Tom Taylor's stuff, like in Superboy, is kind of cut from modern times. And both Nightwing and Superman are pushing back against the status quo, against power brokers who are like ultra wealthy power brokers, and they are both getting pushed back. The pushback is hard for them, to the point where even people with superpowers can be threatened, and it's happening in different ways in both comics. But man, that's a pulled from the headlines.
Yep.
So next up, we sort of talked about this at the top of the show. There's a new Savage Avengers this week,
right? And it has a more specific premise than just Conan out of time with the Marvel heroes. He's, like, specifically being hunted by future Deathlok, or the Deathlok Corps, or whatever they call
it. This came out, I think, in the Jason Aaron Avengers run. Isn't that right, Nick? The Deathlok was, like, the enforcers for the Timekeepers or something.
Yeah,
there is some stripe of Deathlok who's basically, like, a good guy, right?
Yeah. But these Deathloks are, like, they're... It's like an
army
of them.
It's like Terminators, right?
Yes, they're like Terminators.
Yeah.
Anyway, David Pappose is writing this. This is like his first thing at Marvel, which is a pretty big thing. He wrote that Calvin and Hobbes as detectives graphic novel.
What's it called?
Spencer and Locke.
Took some other philosopher names.
So this is it's a really, I love the team. It's like Anti-Venom, Elektra, Daredevil, Weapon H, Black Knight,
Cloak and Dagger.
It's a very strange team.
Yeah, no, but that's a fun team. Like they're. Basically, you're meant to pick, like, Savage Avengers needs to be people who can have been merciless, have wielded swords.
They've got to be savage.
They've got to be, in some ways, savage.
Art is by Carlo Magno. It's really nice. It's a fun continuation. We got a new Marvel Voices this week. This is a short stories with Asian American Pacific Islander, I believe, is the
yeah, that is the broad name.
It's got four stories in it. There's a Shang-Chi, Jimmy Woo story, which is really good. Written by the guy who does Good Asian.
Oh, okay.
It's
probably
my favorite of the stories.
And that's
been
quite the breakout series for us for like a little image series.
There's a Miss Marvel's story that touches on a guy from her run, which is a good little story. There's a Mantis story.
Okay.
From Guardians of the Galaxy, and then there's a Wong story.
Nice.
Good little short stories. Also, no doubt, similar timing. I think we are in AAPI month or something like that.
Yep.
Duo from DC and Earth M, aka Earth Milestone, is a new take on Zombie, which was their Korean American supernatural weirdness. It was very Grant Morrisonian, the original one.
Yeah.
This is a new take on that character. The nanotech that sort of gives him he becomes immortal, and he is dealing with like an evil corporation and evil magic, and it's also weird. It's very interesting, and I thought it was a good first issue.
Yeah, like Duo could be summed up as like kind of a Firestorm like premise.
Yeah.
But the big hook is that a husband and wife get fused, or are going to in some way get fused into like a singular hero, which is a cool idea. A sort of a, well, you know, you may think you know each other, but until you're actually sharing the same headspace, do you? And you know, what would it be like to, be fighting that alongside someone you're that close to too? But yeah, it's a cool premise.
Coming out, there's always been like long delays in comics. The last issue of Watchmen was famously late. The last issue of Camelot 3000. Fables number 150 came out in July 2015.
Yep.
And Fables number 151 comes out this week.
Yep. To be fair, it was meant to end.
It was meant to end, yes. This is a 12-issue new story.
But Bill Willingham wanted to get back on the gravy train.
Bill Willingham and Mark Buckingham are back to do more Fables. If you liked Fables, there's Fables.
Yep. I think some people, by the way, came in on that through, what's the Telltale game?
Wolf Among Us,
yeah. More stories in that setting.
Or that TV show Once Upon a Time.
Among other stuff that I've got this week, I really like the second issue of Spider-Punk.
Yep.
Really like the third issue of Batman Superman World's Finest.
Yeah, there's a bunch of fun characters in there, including, I especially like the Doom Patrols stuff in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's an interesting thing with General Immortus. I was like, oh, that's a pretty wild,
yeah, I like that. That
kind of a
good.
Kind of a twist on running up against their old foe.
It's all by Dan Mora, right? Yeah,
yeah. Dan Mora is just great art. He seems to be having a ball drawing these iconic heroes, you know. And in this one, he gets to they keep on expanding who they're showing up, who's showing up, and here like some Justice League people and stuff show.
Yep.
So it's not just Batman and Superman, but also the Doom Patrol, General Immortus. And again, some leaguers. I don't want to spoil too much, but yeah, pretty cool.
Second issue of Wolverine Patch. Was that this week?
Yep, I like that. Patch continues to be kind of fun intrigue and sort of military action on the island of Madripoor.
And then Thor 25, which continues the Hulk-Thor Banner of War story, but also has an original, it's an anniversary issue, so it's got an original story by DeFalco and friends from like the 90s Thor era that is, I think, I see Executioner and Enchantress and sort of all those classic characters. And then there's a Thor-Loki story, Thor's Wedding, adapted from Norse myth.
Oh, nice. That is in fact, I must see that one because that is the famous Thor cross-dressing story.
Yep, he's cross-dressing in here.
I gotta see how they do it.
Yep. He is fully in a wedding dress. It's great.
If you're gonna beat Loki at his own game, would be willing to go to Bugs Bunny levels.
And then we have Earth Prime, the DC Limited series, which is each issue is doing a different CW show. This one is notable because it's Stargirl and it's written by James Robinson, who wrote Starman and a lot of the stuff that Stargirl is based on.
Right.
Not all of it, because Jeff Johns wrote a lot of that too. But
it's interesting, these CW ones, I was noticing when we first started getting them, instead of trying to get photorealistic artists who drew them just like the show, they actually tended to get more stylized artists, which is kind of a fun, you know, flip side way to go.
Yeah. And then Sandman Before came out this week.
Yep.
Worth noting, that's the final big thick volume, collects all the big Sandman stuff.
Yep. I was talking to a customer just the other day, had picked up like the first volume for the first time, was loving it. He was buying the third the day I talked to him. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to know if it was the final one, and I was really glad that he was digging it so much. He was clearly going through it real quick, and I was like, I think there might be one more, and if they do, they could do yet another one that includes like the various miniseries I think that followed it.
Yeah,
but four will be the main original core series,
and the show will drop on Netflix.
I think it's August, or maybe July. We'll see. Anyway, all right, that's comics of the week. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about, I believe, some television or movies or something. All right, I hope you guys want to hear about Star Trek, because Nick and Dave bullied me until I put it on the agenda. I really love Star Trek Strange New Worlds Episode 2 was fantastic.
Yeah, I honestly think it's better than the Episode 1.
Wrong.
I'm sure that is a lot of people think.
When we were doing the Tech Trek podcast last week, Fathery said that the second episode of a lot of series tends to be the best one to judge them by, because that's when they are kind of have hit their groove and don't have to do the explaining part.
Yeah.
Like the first one had to get Christopher Pike back on the Enterprise and spend a little bit of time doing that. That said, it did have like a full, complete story. This one does, but yeah, this one was kind of able to cut to the chase. And let's talk about what it, before, well, it's an Uhura episode,
yeah.
Which is cool because Uhura gets more back character backstory in this, arguably, than she has in all previous Star Trek appearances combined.
Mm-hmm. I think the opening gag of her being hazed by the pilot, I can't remember her name.
Oh, Ortegas.
Ortegas, yeah.
Ortegas. Who I love.
Was phenomenal, but also that dinner sequence.
We all want to be at that dinner party.
That dinner party was just amazing.
So
right when they
all,
opened.
Let's just quick say, Pike's cabin is going to be, is the captain's cabin to have.
Yeah.
It looks like, I mean, like, he's got, like a cooking island kind of
yep.
thing,
yeah.
and, like, serving thing, and although, well, like, Sisko would cook for his, like, department heads and command staff,
yeah.
like, that, like, so that has been sort of done before, but Pike has his own spin on it, which, first of all, he's making, like, ribs, I think,
yeah.
or something like that.
Wasn't
good.
It, like, a rendition of his kitchen in Montana, though?
Yeah, like, I think you're right, I think it's a riff on that.
Yeah, I think it was
yeah.
very similar to that, so he had kind of a
Made
home away
the
from
Enterprise.
Home.
Yeah.
Did he just replicate those ribs and then pretend he cooked them?
I was going to say, it's clear that he has a mixture of both, like, sort of his... you know, higher ranking officers and like cadets, like Uhura is in this.
Yeah,
and there's and he kind of like shoots the breeze with them. Like,
well,
they joke around. Everybody seemed calm and at ease.
It's the warmth that Anson Mount is able to sort of exude, and kind of right when those doors open, he's like, "Oh, cadet Uhura, you're here finally."
Yep.
And he's like, "Oh, it looks like you got hazed."
Yep. And you know what? I was actually like almost annoyed at first because I was, man, Star Trek should be past an era of hazing. But it's, like, so actually mild.
Yep.
And
yeah.
he didn't, like, spend any time, like, rubbing it in on
no.
her. He was just kind of like, ah. you
they
know,
gotcha.
Just kind of, they gotcha.
Well, and it was that knowing, like, they'd all had it.
Yeah,
like,
right.
It was more of the kind of the tradition you would have in the military or something where basically it's a thing that bonds you.
Right.
Like, oh, we've all been through this.
Right. And
it wasn't a code red.
I don't know if we said it.
It was not a code red.
I don't think we said it. The hazing is not a beating or anything like that. The hazing is that she was told to dress formally.
Well, you were transported out into space. It's what we call a code red.
Also, the talk that she has about why she is at Starfleet.
Yeah.
I did not...
Well,
is that completely...
That's original.
I thought that was one of the best... kind of defining characteristics for her.
I also love making her like a natural language, like that she's skilled with language.
This is something that they had done in like the books first,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And then as the Trek movies were coming out, they sometimes like did that. Like, she was a little bit of like a little prodigy in the newer Abrams movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then like, you go back to like Star Trek V and they wanted a cheap, or four, no, six. And they wanted a cheap gag about how she had to read Klingon out of a book.
Yeah, yeah, like they went for a cheap gag instead of like making her, you know, like really a lot of the bridge crew in the original series, they would later make out that they were kind of prodigies at what they did.
Yeah.
Sulu was this expert pilot, the best
yeah.
of the best, and like McCoy, best of the best doctor, Spock, best of the best science officer, and Uhura was like this, you know, like super skilled linguist, and here they're running with that where she knows all these languages, all these dialects. But they also added something to her, like, we know who her is, kind of becomes a legend,
yeah.
but her, who she is at the time, she doesn't know that.
She's not sure she wants to be in Starfleet.
Yeah,
I thought that was a
great twist, to have somebody who was, like, not a fully committed to the bit.
I also loved the way Spock was basically, I mean, as pissed as Spock gets.
Right.
He was basically like, look, just so you know, we're all dying to be here. Maybe if you don't want to be here, you should leave.
Right. I mean, that makes it sound almost harsher than it was. But
yeah, he was not harsh.
Was,
he doesn't.
It was harsh because he's a Vulcan, but he wasn't. He didn't.
Right.
He wasn't like meaning it that.
Well,
way.
He wasn't like. It was less comparing it to him, and more that there's like thousands of cadets she beat
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
And it was more like to those students who
yeah.
wanted to be the next generation of Starfleet.
Yeah.
They were competing for.
I also
yeah.
this was. I didn't watch any of the shorts that
yep.
they did for like all the different characters. This was actually my first meeting of their Andorian.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
He's actually not a. He's well. He's
well,
a subspecies of Andorian.
And a blind one
yep.
at that. And that introduction was fantastic. I instantly loved that character.
Yeah. What I had picked up from the very short bit they did, which was it probably wasn't more than 20 seconds of
yeah.
time
yeah.
in the short, is that he is this arrogant smartass.
Yes.
And he and like there's you know what's interesting is that the crew feels like they know each other. He and Spock. Kind of vibe and know each other,
yeah.
and they both kind of have a little bit of that prickly, smartest guy in the room vibe.
Yeah,
And that they kind of maybe have bonded over, but it's just kind of suggested. You don't need to know all the details. And Uhura then turns the table on them by starting to talk in their native languages. Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, you badass, Uhura.
Yeah.
But anyway, the whole episode, that's just the opening.
Yeah.
The bigger thing, which, no need to dive deep on this, but is they're trying to stop a comet that's going to collide with, like, a sort of a pre-industrial civilization planet.
Yep.
This is something that's been brought up in other Star Treks before, but the particular wrinkle on this one is that the comet is considered sacred by an alien race, and when Pike is like, okay, yeah, but you can't, surely your god doesn't want it to hit this planet. And they're like, if it misses the planet, that's God's will. If it hits the planet, that's God's will.
Yeah.
And they outgun the Enterprise easily.
Yep. Yeah.
So they're like, they can't use a little bit of bravado and, like, gunboat diplomacy.
They have to use guile.
As with the first episode about the warlike race,
yeah,
I don't see any kind of parallels to the real world of, like, having to deal with heavily armed zealots you can't reason with.
Huh, interesting you bring that up. I hadn't thought of that.
No, there's nothing paralleling our modern era.
But, Trek is always... Here's the thing, is, like, broadly speaking, Trek is going to be respectful of religions up until the point that seems reasonable, wherein they impinge on life and happiness.
Yeah.
Then they kill God. Kirk will do that in a heartbeat. He will kill a god.
But I thought the twist in this towards the end was very interesting.
It was good.
Right. And Pike does kind of pull a Kirk-like gambit, which is fun. Yeah. I love when the captains are kind of like one step ahead.
Yep.
It doesn't work. Not everything he tried worked out.
No.
And Uhura got to shine too, but she wasn't not in such a way that she's like, she didn't save the day quite.
No.
But she did play a key role.
Yes.
And they do that done in one thing where you get a good character development for her, and it kind of ties into some of the thematics of predestination, which are going on with both these aliens and with Pike's own fears about his mortality.
Let me ask you this, Dave, before we get too deep into it.
Yeah.
Do you think they're going to undo Pike's future?
I've considered the possibility that they are at least want to touch on that idea. I kind of don't think they will.
I don't think they will either, but I think they're going to tiptoe around it.
I think they are...
So that they can give us that dramatic tension of like, well are they going to avoid it? Are they going
right.
to? They've definitely established enough doubt where I'm like, they may not go the way that we expect them to.
Yeah,
right. But even if, like, here's the thing: is like, I can't remember. Did Pike, when he had his vision, did he know that there is also a sort of happy ending that he does get?
I don't think he does. No,
because if you don't know that that's coming, then yes, you would want to be doing everything you can to avoid it. But in a lot of ways, he actually ends up sort of with like the love of his life.
Yeah.
And a pretty ideal finale, but if all he knows is what's right before that,
yeah,
you do anything you could to get out.
By the way, we talked about Kirk quite a bit. I did want to mention that it does appear that James Kirk got his bravado. It may be a family trait.
Yes. Yes, for those who've seen Galaxy Quest and maybe remember, is it Guy Fleekman?
Yeah.
Played by
Sam Rockwell,
the kind of cheesy mustachioed security guy.
But that guy is like a coward who's aware that he's like the red shirt.
Right.
This guy is just like, well, let's touch the artifact. He's that guy in the D&D game where you're like, the DM's like, you see this throbbing red orb of danger. I lick it.
Right. He's kind of a doofus.
Yeah.
That is to say, that we're talking about Sam Kirk, Kirk's brother, who appeared in one episode of the original series in which he died.
Now we know how. Doing something stupid.
Now we know how. But he's like a likable doofus.
He's like a biologist, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and he's like trying to like kind of like give Uhura some energy. And
he's like, check this out.
Yeah. By the way, later afterwards, when she is like kind of very nervous, Spock gives her a not so great pep talk.
No.
In which he says, like, he's like, well, we already know one thing, don't touch it. And he's like, so one variable has been removed.
Yeah.
That should be good. And I'm like, that actually is not a bad Vulcan pep talk.
Yeah.
Not what she needed.
No.
But what he said afterward was actually really good.
And she's like, that was a better pep talk.
Yeah. And it yet still managed to be very Vulcan.
By the way, there was a part of me, because I don't know that much about the original Star Trek, but you had told me about George Samuel Kirk.
Yeah.
That I'm like, did they just bring this guy in to kill him in this episode?
Oh, man. Like, as the actual
like, that was actually his death?
I believe he's got a number of years left.
Yeah.
Roughly, I think, 7.
Anyway, it's super fun, and it looks gorgeous. Yep.
I had a few minor complaints. I'll just throw out there that once or twice when their shields are, like, down to, like, 20%, they were still being a little blasé about things, Pike was, and I was like, I feel like that's a time to... There'd be no wisecracks. One or two hits, and you could literally lose everybody. Including the planet. But, like, you know, here's the thing. It's, like, the complaints, they keep on falling by the wayside to me because the good stuff is so good. So, yeah, I'm very happy with it. And, like, really looking forward to it each week.
Kids in the Hall came back.
Yep.
They're now the old men in the hall. They're all in their 60s.
How long has it been since the last
kids? It was 97 or something. Yeah. It's been a while.
The opening is hysterical.
Yeah, basically, the premise they have...
I just saw the trailer for this, by the way, in the like a few weeks back, and the trailer was quite good.
They dig them up from a grave where they've been, and they've been basically laying under the grave this whole time. and they're all aging, and they're like, we should have gone for suspended animation. but yes, a TV executive digs them up to make 8 episodes for Amazon, basically. Yeah. And I don't know if y'all have watched much Kids in the Hall, but it's weirder than even I remember.
Oh, yeah.
I've forgotten just how weird. So for example, the first sketch is Kevin McDonald and Dave Foley are robbing a bank. Uh-huh. They run out to the car. The people have pulled the alarm, and the cops show up, and they're like, wait, the cops are looking for clothes people. And so they take off all their clothes, get out of the car fully naked.
Oh, wow.
And the cops go for it.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Well, you know, I always remember that they use, like, kind of like the sketch I've seen most because it was just one of my favorite absurd sketches, mm-hmm. Car Bangers.
Yep.
About dudes who fuck cars.
Yep.
Begins with, like, kind of like almost like a weird swerve where it's this woman who's like just trying to, feels like one they're trying to pull one over on her, and they're keeping her car because they're just basically like trying to con her, basically. Yeah. Just trying to get more money out of her or whatever.
Yep.
And then she's a bit of a character herself, but then she sneaks back into their garage and people are fucking cars.
Yeah.
hilarious scene. And then it also has a bizarre outro with Henry Ford in it.
Yeah.
There's, like, lots of weird swerves like that. That's their thing.
There's a lot of really funny, weird ones. There's a couple callbacks. They bring back the guy, Bruce McCullough plays a kid.
Yep.
They did a riff on that. I don't know if you've seen the Eradicator return yet. That's their racquetball playing guy.
Yes.
Also Bruce McCullough character. He seemed to do some of his return characters. They brought back Bruno Ponce Jones and his lover.
Yes,
And it's,
there are some bizarre ones as well. Some of the new stuff.
Yeah, it's delightful. I mean, you're never sure. Oh, the post-apocalypse DJ thing that they did cracked me up.
That's great.
It's very strange. It's very funny. I'd forgotten how much I like Kids and All, and I really wasn't sure if they could come back, but they came back just as strong. Like,
yeah,
it's
none of them have missed a beat.
No,
I mean, I thought the same, but, I mean, Dave McCullough...
Well, I suppose when your comedy is already so idiosyncratic and like, what's, like, in some ways so ahead of its time, that you have a certain timelessness. Or they've done that. Some comedians are very much tied to an era, and their, I think, particular brand of absurdity is one of those things that doesn't
all these people have, I think, pretty much stayed in kind of some facet of, like, doing stuff.
Mark McKinney was on Superstore.
Dave Foley pops up in random places.
Dave Foley pops up in random places. Kevin McDonald?
I think so.
He voiced a bunch of stuff for Lilo and Stitch.
I was going to say he was one of the aliens. Yeah,
yeah, so I will say I think it's such a strange thing to bring back.
It is, but sketch comedy always works.
Yeah.
Or doesn't always work, but I will say...
There's always an appetite
always an appetite for it. That's what I was
to say. Also, they do let interstitials are like maybe 20 seconds long in each episode of the Friends of Kids of the Hall.
Yes.
In which they get celebrities to come in and play random weird people.
Yes.
And I don't know how much of that was improv. I feel like it might have all just been improvised.
Oh, well, I think the first episode is what? Pete Davidson?
Yeah. Just playing a random
Catherine
guy.
Catherine O'Hara shows
Catherine
up
O'Hara,
at one.
I forget who all's in it, but it's a bunch of... Oh, Mark Hamill.
Oh, yeah. Mark. pretty much, I would assume all their friends.
Yeah. It's definitely worth a look.
It is.
It's super fun. Dave, you want to talk about Godfathers?
Yeah, did I talk about this at all the previous weeks or anything like that?
I don't think you did.
I might have. Because, I've been watching, like, some war movies and stuff like that. The only reason I decided to watch Godfather and Godfather 2, which I hadn't seen.
Yep.
I've seen the first one. Was because they were on Paramount Plus. So I saw them promoting the Godfather trilogy, along when I would be watching Star Trek and stuff. And
don't they have a new TV show called The Offer, I believe?
Yeah, although I heard mixed reviews.
Yeah,
on
I've
it
heard mixed
about
as well.
Anyway, but yes, it's about the true story of the making of,
yep,
of how that came about. Just checking. Has everybody here seen at least Godfather 1 and 2?
Yes.
Once on television a long time ago.
Did you see the weird chronological one where they put everything in chronological order?
No. I literally, this was like years ago, I saw the first one.
You know, if you watch both of them, both Godfather 1 and 2, that's like the equivalent of four regular movies.
Yeah.
Because these movies are like 4 hours long.
But it's one of those things where I feel like whoever you are, you've somehow osmosis the ideas and story of the Godfather.
There's a lot of lines, whether it's like sleeps with the fishes, offer you can't refuse, keep pulling me back, and stuff like that, that are like, it's in the pop culture now.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing, of course, is Godfather is actually a very specific story that is an analog to a lot of real life events about the rise of the mafia, and has characters which are direct analogs to real-world people. So in the first Godfather, you know, we got Marlon Brando, of course, as Vito Corleone, head of the family, mm-hmm, and Al Pacino in the sort of starring role as his son, who reluctantly sort of assumes the mantle when Dad's shot and recovering. Who else is in it?
But, I mean, he was, like, in the military.
Right, he was the one who was trying not to get into the family business.
Yeah. Where, like, James Caan and
whoever plays Fredo.
Yeah,
and there's a couple like notable. One of them,
like Diane Keaton, is like the wife.
Yeah, ends up being the wife.
And
girlfriend.
Talia Shire is his sister.
Yep.
Tons of great acting. Very short version is I really enjoyed watching these. They operate like in some ways like Goodfellas does, not in that sort of pop Scorsese style, but in the sense that they are completely neutral towards their subject matter.
No.
And also don't particularly try and get in the head of the characters. Like Michael Corleone, we know that he has shied away from being in the family, but he's not you don't hear him talking about it. You don't hear long conversations with his wife. Oh, maybe I should take over for Pops or whatever. Like, he just does it at some point.
This is adapted from Mario Puzo's tome. Yes.
Yeah.
He also, but then he went on to write Superman.
Yeah, as crazy as it is.
Yeah.
But one of the vignettes, these movies are made up of a lot of sort of vignettes weaving in and around their lives. As they, you know, try to consolidate power, fight with other mobs, and, you know, broker truces and stuff sometimes. But the, I lost my train of thought.
Did you guys mention Robert Duvall?
Duvall.
He's consigliere.
I was trying to think who the lawyer was. Yeah, the consigliere.
Great role. Like,
yeah, he's
truly,
great
truly a great role, yeah, as the kind of neutral party advisor who knows what's up. Oh, I know what I was going to mention. I was talking about the analogs. So there's a guy named Johnny Fontaine, I think, who's like a...
Johnny Five. He's like the robot Johnny Five.
He's not the robot Johnny Five.
Oh.
He is a crooner. Because this is mostly set in, I think, 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a singer who wants to get into Hollywood, but like he's at loggerheads with a producer who doesn't like him and won't let him into this Western he wants to star in. Okay, so this guy is an analog to Frank Sinatra,
yeah,
who famously had mod pies. I thought that was the case watching it, and then I asked somebody, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's 100% Frank Sinatra. Like, not literally the events that it... This is the producer ends up with the horse head in his bed. These are violent movies, too.
Yeah.
Ends up with a horse head in his bed from his prized, beloved horse as a message. I don't know that necessarily anything quite like that ever happened, but Sinatra was a guy who liked to play up his mob ties. And also, there's a... So they're primarily an Italian family, but they also have both a rivalry and occasionally alliances with, like, a Jewish mob. And one of those guys is the guy who essentially founded Las Vegas, built, like, a resort out there in the desert and turned it into that. And I think, if I remember right, he's the analog to Bugsy Siegel. I might be mixing names up, but I think that maybe that's the case.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway... So, Godfather's great. Years ago, Randy, you hosted a party where we watched it. You were watching it for the first time,
yep,
and a friend of ours,
yep, Kelly,
did an amazing job of. She made this like multi-course like Italian
food,
meal,
yeah, yeah.
Because we know that like there's it's not like throughout, but there's several scenes of people eating. There's somebody who's like teaching Michael Corleone. They're like showing him how to make this recipe.
It is generally said that if you watch Godfather, you will get hungry for Italian food.
Absolutely.
And actually, that's true of Goodfellas as well, especially if you watch a little bit of the end.
Oh, man, yeah, the prison sequence. Yeah.
Well, but also like the end when he's making the gravy and all
right,
that.
Right.
Like you'll want Italian food and cocaine.
That's right. Anyway, so on to Godfather 2. Godfather 2 is split into two stories. I did not know anything about this. I did not know that Robert De Niro played the young Vito Corleone, who, you know, is the kind of memorable backstory. And by the way, Mario Puzo, I think, had been, before those books came out, Nick, he'd been writing somewhat more obscure stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he explicitly wanted to write, like, a crowd pleaser, like something that was for the masses. And there's, like, some just really memorable, like, all these scenes are really memorable. In Italy, when he's young, when he's like 7 or 8 or something like that, basically his dad runs afoul of the local don and gets killed. And this is seen very early on in the movie. It's already happened by the time you find out about it. And his older brother has like vowed to get revenge. He dies with that happening. And his mom takes him to see the don to plead for his life. She's like, he's my only son left. She actually says he's slow. He's like not going to amount to anything. He'll never be a threat to you. Let him live. Don is like, I'd be crazy to do that. And pulls a gun. She struggles with him and gets between and dies. The young Vito Corleone escapes, and some family friends help get him to America. As it turns out, the guy was correct. that half of the movie follows his rise to power in New York. Robert De Niro does an amazing job of being very understated and not Robert De Niro. He plays what feels like a young... you know, everybody who's seen the original knows that Marlon Brando plays him with this kind of quiet power.
Yeah.
Almost comically slow at times. Like, he is, like, just a slow-moving person.
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting way to portray him. De Niro does that as well. And so he doesn't, like, raise his voice. He doesn't get pissed off.
More of kind of like Heat style of Robert De Niro.
Yeah, and like even less overt than like the way he's in that, because he's kind of sharp in that.
Yeah.
Really well done, and he satisfying in that you will ultimately see him go back to this old guy who's still alive in Italy. His story will culminate with a brutal finishing of this dude. Meanwhile, Michael Corleone has all sorts of adventures in the present of the 60s where he's, more ins and outs with the mob. He's got to go in front of Senate mob hearings. Some of his machinations fall apart. He's got personal problems with his wife, who very memorably loses. He wants a son as an heir, and he doesn't have one yet. And there's big reveals about why that doesn't happen. What he thought was a miscarriage that his wife had while he was away turns out not to have been a miscarriage. It was a very direct action against him. And so it leads to some pretty intense stuff in the end. And also his brother Fredo. This is his right. movie. He's the screw-up who's the older brother who was never as sharp as anybody else in the family. I feel for Fredo. I am Fredo. there's all the family drama is pretty compelling. And, like, these are bad people, right? They're terrible people. But, like a lot of mob movies, they have relatable family problems. They're just on these larger scales. Everything is on this larger and more violent scale. So you're
rooting for these people.
In a way, yeah. it's hard kind of not to. You know, it's one of those things where, like, if they run up against cops, they're corrupt cops.
Yeah.
And if they've got to take down a mobster, it's because some mobster shot Sonny in the face.
I mean,
and it's like, they massacred my boy.
Yep.
I mean, it's a little like the same thing. Like, I feel bad for rooting for any character in a Quentin Tarantino film, because they're usually all just scumbags.
Right. But you don't see them doing their scumbaggiest stuff. Mostly you just see them kind of trying to be a normal people. It's sort of the same here, that you don't see the sort of worst of the worst, and arguably that's not that's a little bit of a choosing a side when you know when you're only seeing them like, oh, they're helped out the lady in the neighborhood who was going to get evicted from her house. Vito Corleone goes and scares the shit out of the guy.
What nice gangsters they are.
Yeah.
What you didn't see is that they bombed that same lady 3 weeks later.
Well,
she was behind on a rent.
I have not seen Godfather 3. I know that people out there are silently saying don't.
He's not gonna.
I'm probably not going to, at least immediately, maybe later on. I know it's not that well liked, but I also know that there's like, I think, been both a bit of a renewed appreciation, and there was a new cut, I think, in the early 2000s. So, you know, I'll give it a shot someday, but for now I'll just let the two best ones ferment. And anybody who's got Paramount Plus and is watching Strange New Worlds like they should be, should also go take a little side tour of The Godfather.
So, yeah, I do want to say, without harshing too much, I was not as big into Godfather 2. I think I really liked the backstory stuff that was all De Niro and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the continuation of the Godfather story, I didn't find as compelling.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting you said that, and I was kind of aware of that while I was watching it, because like I actually felt the two stories were really on level playing fields as far as keeping my interest.
So as you were watching, you're like, maybe such a dope.
I have that thought a lot. So it's basically a background thought at this point. Yeah. Just a constant thing.
Yeah.
And my problem with mob movies is your problem with Hitman movies. I just kind of abstain from them.
So Nick hates mobsters and zombies, Dave hates Hitman, and I hate elves.
Yes. All right, well, we need to make a poll for the store at some point and find out who's right.
Oh, I know I'm wrong. People love zombies.
Love zombies.
No, but people are also burned out on zombies.
Are they?
Nick, this is your time to shine.
I don't
people
think
that's got a disappointed
thing.
By the end of Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Did it end?
It's been dying for years now. But somehow it keeps shambling on.
Interesting.
I wonder if there's a metaphor for that. I'll try and think
Dave,
of it later.
We are the Walking Dead.
Oh, shit.
So, do we all like pirates?
Yes.
I like pirates.
Yeah,
pirates are cool.
So, I played this cooperative game called Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Yes.
It is a tile laying game. When the tiles all run out, you're sort of at the end of your game. Basically, the thing is, you are pirates who roll up in your little dinghy to a flaming pirate ship.
Yep, another ship is going
down.
That I'm
pretty sure is haunted, because I think there are skeletons and stuff.
Oh my goodness.
And you have to get into this flaming ship, and as you're like putting fires out a little bit so you can run around, you kill the guards, you take the treasure, you get back on the boat before the whole thing blows up.
So you've got to go in, and there's fires to contend with.
Yep.
Can the skeletons hurt you?
The skeletons can hurt you.
It's like the crew from the, what is it, the thing?
Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yes.
What's that ship called? The Black Pearl.
Black Pearl.
Yeah.
So like the Black Pearl's ship is going down. And you lay down tiles to escape.
So every turn, you've got to
get treasure.
You start off with three tiles.
Yes.
And every turn you lay a tile and you have to like match up that. Some of them have doors, some of them don't have all the doors.
Yeah.
You have to match it up and you pull out a token that's in each room. And the token will either have a guard who's guarding a treasure, a skeleton pirate who has either grog or a cutlass. And if you kill that pirate, you get the grog, which gives you your fatigue back, which is what you have a fatigue meter that goes up to 16. If you go to 16, you die. And then you have to take another pirate in there. Or it gives you a cutlass, which makes your combat ability go to a higher level when you're using it.
Okay.
And then you have equipment you're swapping out. There's like a sword and a gun and a bucket and a blanket that help with the lowering things. And your characters have different abilities, kind of like Pandemic or any of these.
Yeah. Is this like Pandemic, like an hour-ish game?
Yeah, yeah. So you're going in. My guy had the ability to douse fires adjacent to him. So my entire game was basically running around keeping the fires are represented by dice.
Yeah.
They're little yellow or red dice that go from 1 to 6. If they go to 6, they explode.
Oh.
And then everything around it goes up by 1, and if those go to 6, they explode.
Oh, that's fun.
If you get too many explosions, the game ends. And also, if you explode a treasure, the treasure goes away.
No.
And if you explode too many treasures, you can't win the game anymore.
Right.
And this is a cooperative game?
It's a co-op game.
Like Pandemic and a lot of those kind of games, there's almost always multiple ways to lose, only one way to win.
There were 5 ways to lose and 1 way to win.
Yeah.
And we thought we lost at the end.
Now, I think people might hear that and like think that's a real negative,
no,
but like
it's super
Pandemic
fun.
Is one of the best co-op games ever, and you can win, lose multiple ways, but like you will almost always, a lot of times in Pandemic, you feel like you just win or just lose by a hair's breadth, and it's very exciting. Would this have that same vibe, Randy, of kind of like that suspense?
Yeah.
Shows like that or the Forbidden Games.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. The learning curve was a little sharper than I think on Pandemic and some of those.
Interesting.
But as a gameplay, I thought it was a lot of fun.
Did you win or lose?
We won.
Nice.
Although we got to a point where we got the last tile, and we hadn't gotten all the treasures out, and we're like, oh, I guess we lost, and we had to look it up, and like, oh, no, you don't actually lose, you just stop placing tiles, and now the explosions are going to be more frequent.
Oh, okay.
And we managed, we had like one more, so maybe
you can,
like one more
you
turn
to get out.
You can
move back through places you've been to?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's basically, cool. If you're moving from one place that has a fire of like four to a fire of like five,
mm-hmm.
Basically every increase of fire level, you get fatigued.
Oh, okay.
And if you run, you get extra fatigue. And fatigue is what can end you.
So if I understand right, y'all's last minute win means that some pirate came running up out of the hold, flames licking
yes,
at him,
with
holding
two
a
treasures in his
holding
hands.
Treasure
yes.
cases, and leaped over the side while
the whole ship
detonated.
Blew behind him. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds fun. What's that? What's it called?
Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. All right, that'll do it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.